There are those who view the temptation of Jesus in the wilderness as a second Eden experience. The first Adam gave way to temptation, and the fallout from his disobedience had consequences and repercussions for everything around him. All of the created order was affected. It fell with him, and so Adam and Eve were banished from the Garden of Eden. Jesus, as the second Adam, resists temptation in the wilderness. His obedience restores that small portion of the created order back to its original integrity, its peacefully ordered style of existence. Thus it is that Jesus does not need to fear the wild beasts around him. The law of predation, the terrible truth that animals exist by and large by killing and eating each other, has been briefly suspended in that small part of the creation. A second Eden has emerged for 40 days in that small zone of divine reintegration of the world, as it was meant to be and as it should be. This is a charming and attractive version of today's gospel reading. Those who love animals are perhaps not keen to dwell on the amount of casual cruelty that accompanies their life in the wild. So it's tempting to see the sojourn of Jesus in the wilderness as a mini winding back of the clock to the time of original innocence, when the lion dwelt with the lamb in perfect harmony. He is safe because they have lost interest in killing and eating him and each other. But that ignores the deep down truth that underlies evolution, that death is the engine that drives life on this planet. Animal predation provides the sustenance that feeds the young of each species. It weeds out the weak who might be genetically unfit to transmit their DNA into the future, and it keeps animals alert and on their toes as fit for purpose in the survival stakes of life in the wild. It is a remarkable truth that dogs' brains have shrunk in size as a result of their being domesticated by us, whereas the wolves they came from originally have bigger brains because they require all the cognitive functioning they can get to stay perpetually alert and alive in the combat zone of the wolf world. If we take a grimly realistic view of what Jesus was up against in his time of tempting in the wilderness, then we will assume that the animals that surrounded him and that he came across were being themselves and doing their thing, just as they always had and do. They remained true to their nature. What kept Jesus safe was not them turning over a new leaf, but rather the protection he enjoyed from a different kind of being, the angels. Mark seems to be saying that when he reports he was with the wild beasts and the angels looked after him. Angelic protection had saved Jesus as a little child when Joseph was directed to seek refuge for the Holy Family in Egypt, thus saving them from Herod's murderous cull of local children. Angels will be there again, close to the end, sustaining Jesus and comforting him on his last night on earth in that very difficult and distressing time of anxious waiting in the Garden of Gethsemane. Just in case we're inclined to get sceptical and dismissive about angels as remnants of a bygone age of magical explanations for what happens in the world, let me report that I find it mighty interesting that some of the finest minds in 20th century theology gave generous time and attention to those spiritual beings. Their report card is that angels are indispensable in the story of our salvation, that these remarkable beings have at present unique privileges of access to the divine being, but that in the long run, we human beings have more to hope for and more to expect in terms of our status within the life of the world to come. There is something about angels that's useful for us in our Lenten observance. Abraham Lincoln used a wonderful phrase in his inaugural address as president, appealing to his fellow countrymen to step back from the madness of civil war. He appealed to the better angels of our nature. By that he meant that inner voice of calm conscience, of moderating common sense, of prudence and restraint that has learned from our past mistakes and is alert to the necessity of not repeating them again. Above all, the better angels of our nature are those peaceful parts of our higher nature that counsel us against the destructive effects of bitterness, angry passion, and divisive conflict. They are all for us remaining cool, calm, and collected. More than that, they encourage us to be messengers of peace when all around us are losing their heads. The poet Robert Herrick was coming at this from another angle in that poem on the front cover of today's Pebble, when he counsels us as part of our Lenten fast to, quote, fast from strife, from old debate and hate, to circumcise thy life. This morning, I want us to think for a moment about the sins against charity that are all so easy to commit with the tongue. the casually cruel phrase that commits character assassination against someone not present who has no opportunity to defend themselves. The malicious morsel of gossip that delights in others' difficulties, failures and follies, and that lacks the fullness of truth. The witty phrase and striking aphorism laced with acid that leaves others wincing with embarrassment and shame. The letter of James is onto something when it observes what a huge stack of timber can be set ablaze by the tiniest spark, and the tongue is in effect a fire. James goes on to observe how difficult it is to subdue the tongue, to get it under control, as an organ of expression that delights to speak well of others and to protect their reputations. While concentrated moral effort is a big help in mobilizing the better angels of our nature in this regard, we shall also require help, divine assistance no less. If angels have a protective role, if each one of us has a guardian angel, then let us ask God to send our guardian angel to watch over us with special attention throughout the 40 days of Lent, to guard us, guide us, warn us, and encourage us to renounce the sharp tongue and the unkind turn of phrase. May the better angels of our nature combine and coalesce with the heavenly angels to make us better people who are more pleasant to have around and, dare I say it, more Christian.